Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
A big Monday show planned for you guys. We're telling you everything you need to know about the three newest Seahawks, but we're not the only ones, Jake. Oklahoma defensive coordinator Alex Grinch is going to join us at 1 p.m. to help us get to know cornerback Trey Brown. Brown going to be in there competing for a starting job right alongside Trey Flowers, Akella Witherspoon, DJ Reed, Pierre Desir. He'll be in there in a competitive camp, Jake, at corner for that position in particular. Same goes for Dwayne Eskridge and Strone Forsythe. And we're going to be talking about how competitive this roster has become even prior to those three picks, but now especially with those three picks a bit later in the show. It was a decent draft, I thought, for the Seahawks, a really decent one. And to be honest, Jake, I'm a bit surprised to see so many people disappointed by it. And I'll tell you, this is my theory. It's not a new original theory. I think it's a popular theory. I'll tell it to you right now. I think that the tables have turned for Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson in that 2012 draft class, once panned, once given D grades and F grades, now they are recognized as two of the most talented players in football. Russell Wilson in particular being a franchise star that's been dominating headlines for the last 2 months. He was talking about offensive linemen. And because the Seahawks didn't take an offensive lineman with their first pick, a lot of people are viewing the Seahawks draft as a failure. I'm convinced that that's it, Jake.
Well, it's always amazing to see how, you know, the national pundits aren't always up to date with exactly what each team individual needs are. And obviously, we are very, very close to the Seahawks, very zeroed in on the Seahawks and know exactly what they're after. And I walked away thinking that this was a great draft by the Seattle Seahawks. Team no trade back, Stacy. Some of you guys thought I was crazy. Stacy herself thought I was obnoxious talking about it. and some of you guys thought, Jake, that would be nice if they stayed at pick 60, at 56, but there is no way that this is the Seahawks, right? We're talking about the Seahawks, and there's no way that they are not going to trade this pick back. Pick 56 came, they used it, and they ended up only having three draft picks when it was all said and done. And I'm incredibly proud of Pete and John for being able to stay pat, hold pat, because I think they got themselves a very intriguing dynamic player in Dwayne Eskridge, somebody that I think is going to bring a lot to the table for this offense. I like what they got in Trey Brown. He was a big time surprise for me in terms of what the selection. I thought that they were going to go with their prototype, and there's a bigger conversation to be had about Trey Brown, about the cornerback position, about the change in philosophy, Stacy, that I believe that they have shown in regards to the cornerback position. But Trey Brown coming in a little bit undersized, under 6 foot, but he brings speed, he brings tenacity, brings playmaking ability. And then the biggest surprise was them trading back, right? You knew that at some point they were going to trade back. They traded their original fourth round pick to get an additional picks, and then they used their last couple picks to trade back up into this draft to select an offensive tackle in Strone Forsythe out of Florida. And they really, Stacy, honestly, Pete Carroll and John Schneider really truly feel like they got one of the biggest steals in the draft with Strone Forsythe falling all the way down to them that late into the draft. And so if you just look at it, they only had three selections, which is extremely weird for the Seahawks. It's
weird.
The first time it's ever happened in the Pete Carroll and John Schneider era, one of the least amount of draft picks in NFL history. But I feel like they come away with three good quality players that you can see playing right now in different roles. You can see them competing for starting positions, and you can see the developmental process in a positive way that they are looking at this, not just for this year, but next year as well.
Yeah, I think let's look at those two picks in particular, kind of on either side of Trey Brown. And we'll talk plenty about Trey Brown. We're going to have his former defensive coordinator on with us at 1 p.m. today. So let's just talk about Eskridge and Forsythe quickly. Jake, if there was one kind of common denominator with a lot lot of the national reviews of the Seahawks draft class, it was that Forsythe was the steal. Forsythe might have been the best pick, and that Eskridge was going to be a gamble. Maybe they thought, like, look, he's a talented guy. Was he the right pick for Seattle? I saw a lot of reviews that would say, hey, they've got DK Metcalf. They've got Tyler Lockett. Why do you need another receiver? You need a cornerback. You need offensive line help. Why go with another receiver? So let's just talk about that first. There's so much to get into with this draft. So let's talk about Eskridge for just 1 minute here. I think that he brings you a speed factor I don't know that you've had since Tyler Lockett you first took in 2015. And Tyler Lockett said himself that he's missed a step since his kind of horrific leg injury. And so you haven't really quite had that, whether it's in your return game, whether it's as a deep target. They have always wanted that guy. Always. They were hoping Paul Richardson would be the deep target. They were hoping that David Moore would be that guy. And both of them at times were. They just were never completely reliable, never beat out Lockett or Metcalf, or in the case of Richardson, Baldwin or Graham at times. And that's why they were a wide receiver three, but they always had that deep threat. I think that John and Pete both hoping that Eskridge can bring even more of that for them. That is what a great offense needs. You want to talk about one way to fix your problems from last year when your offense completely fell apart? Well, we saw what it looked like when DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett were covered and that deep ball was taken away. You needed another option, and you didn't have it. And I know that they brought in Gerald Everett. I know they kept Chris Carson. But Carson is essentially your only starting running back, starting caliber running back, and you don't know what Everett's going to look like with your system. And by the way, Carson got more receiving yards, more receiving touchdowns than any of your tight ends last year. So yeah, you did need that receiving target, and I think that getting a speedy guy that can also help you in the return game was a good choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that overall, I think they knocked it out of the park with this Dwayne Eskridge pick. Now, one of the things that I was curious about was, are they going to look for a bigger outside receiver, Terrace Marshall Jr., somebody that I had profiled, Stacy? He was still left on the board. The Carolina Panthers ended up selecting him. But they went for a more speedy slot receiver type. And we later came to find out that they don't view him as just a slot receiver. They view him as an all-around player, a guy that can play inside, outside, can be used in a variety of different ways. And what you have is a legitimate playmaker. And what Dwayne Eskridge brings to the table with his, you know, sub-4.3 speed, Stacy, is he isn't just a burner. He's a guy that can get you tremendous run after catch, whether it's a hitch route, a slant route, being used in the fly sweep game that Shane Waldron has in this offense. I think that what he becomes is the ultimate chess piece. And for this offense, you have to remember, if you go back to the Los Angeles Rams, what personnel do they use a ton of? Last year, they got into a little bit more of 12 personnel 11. with the addition of Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett and all that. But yes, they predominantly operate out of 11 personnel. They want to go fast. They want to fly. They want to attack. And when they were at their best, they had Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, and Cooper Kupp. And right now, you're looking at this offense receiver-wise, and you've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and now Dwayne Eskridge, guys that can flat-out fly. And I know Tyler Lockett says he's lost his step, but this guy can still run a 4-4, and he can fly and get past any defender in the league. And so you have a group that can really be on the attack. And the other thing that Dwayne Eskridge is going to be able to do for you is, Stacey, we all remember the second half of last season, how hard it was to muster up, to generate a big play, how hard it was to be able to convert on third down, how hard it was for them to be able to find a playmaker outside of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to get going. And now I believe that they have a player that can create problems, that can make other people better, can make Tyler and DK Metcalf's job easier. And if you ask Dwayne Eskridge himself here in cut number one, you know, he believes that too.
Yeah, so I know about Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and then DK, you know, so I just come in and bring some more explosiveness to it. You know, those are all dogs that I mentioned. You know, I'm also a dog, so I feel like I'll be able to fit in pretty good, you know, and just take it to another level, do what I'm paid to do now.
Now, Dwayne Eskridge, you know, you listen to this guy talk and you listen to his interview, and obviously we will get even more in depth as the week goes on. But Eskridge, to me, is a guy that screams confidence, screams the understanding of who he is and what he's supposed to do. And if he's able to come into the league with the same type of mindset and mentality that DK Metcalf did a couple years ago, I'm seeing the same types of things in terms of the mock drafters. Oh, well, he didn't run a big expanded route tree at the collegiate level. You know, this guy is going to only be able to come in and run a certain amount of routes. Well, the same thing was said about DK Metcalf, and this guy came in and worked his tail off and developed into a heck of a receiver, a heck of an explosive player. And Dwayne Eskridge here in cut number two has the same level of work ethic in the league. I think he's going to be able to make a very, very easy transition.
Yeah, I did the whole season. You know, I made a lot of sacrifices. I knew exactly what I needed to do when it came to my routines of taking care of my body, watching film, you know, everything. I always checked every single box this year. And, you know, I just did everything that I needed to do. And then when it came into the field, you know, it wasn't anything new. You know, I practiced some of the plays that I had that were touchdowns this year that everybody thought was explosive and all that. I was doing that exact thing in practice, you know, so it just translated right to the game. You know, I kept it going the entire season.
I love to hear that, you know, as a quarterback listening to a receiver talk like that, you know, understanding the value of hard work, understanding the value of study and preparation. And a lot of guys don't learn that until it's too late when they get into the NFL. You know, they realize that that's what it's supposed to take. And before you know it, their opportunity is gone. And I think that Dwayne Eskridge already comes in with that mature mentality. And if he's able to put it together the same way, as I mentioned before, DK Metcalf, I think it's going to be exciting, Stacey. And the other aspect about this offense as well that's different from years past, the nine seasons of offense that we've seen here in Seattle under Russell Wilson and with Pete Carroll, is Shane Waldron utilizes not only the quick game and slants and outs and hitches and things of that nature, but they utilize bubble screens. They utilize receiver screens an awful lot. And so you're talking about ways to develop and get big plays. Dwayne Eskridge can be a guy that can get you tremendous yards after catch and take it to the house when he gets a sliver of daylight. So I think overall this makes this group more complete. It'll make it tougher. And this guy, Dwayne Eskridge, will be somebody that defensive coordinators have to pay attention to, have to game plan around, and that is something that you love to see in terms of this offense gaining tremendous offensive firepower. And can I just say this, Stacey? You talk about this in terms of the mock drafters, right? People panning this pick. If the Kansas City Chiefs had made the same selection, I think people would be going crazy over this pick. Oh my gosh, they got this crazy explosive player, another player that's just like Tyreek Hill, more firepower for Patrick Mahomes in this offense. You know, they're going to be so tough to stop. But for whatever reason, that conversation is not the same here in Seattle. And I think that's exactly what they did, is add more tremendous firepower for Russell Wilson and this offense.
Yeah, I think that they needed a wide receiver. It was an underrated need. And I do agree with you. I think that when Kansas City, it's like when they took Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it was seen as like an embarrassment of riches for Kansas the city's offense, whereas, you know, Seattle does it and it's kind of panned. Now, Seattle has had draft misses, and Kansas City has won a Super Bowl, been to another Super Bowl since the last time Seattle was even in an NFC championship. So Kansas City for right now has earned the benefit of the doubt, and Seattle needs to earn it back. So as much as I'll join that conversation about, oh, if this was happening in Kansas City, well, Seattle, you got to get back there too. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. One thing I'll add about Eskridge, a really cool story, and we'll talk about it later, is that idea of him switching to corner for a year because they needed depth in that secondary. Prior to that, in 2018, he had kind of a breakout season with 770-something odd yards and three touchdowns. In 2019, ahead of that season, the person who recommended to his coach, Tim Lester, that he swap to a cornerback, guess which team, Jake, that scout was from? You don't have to guess. It's the Kansas City Chiefs. Isn't that interesting? The Kansas City Chiefs.
It is.
A scout from the Chiefs is who went to his coach recommending, like, hey, help, you know, make him a little more versatile. Ironic, given the comparisons to Tyreek Hill. Breaks his collarbone, comes back as a full-time wide receiver. But having spent time at defensive back, I think that that expanded his understanding, whether it's route concepts, whatever it is. He clearly took something from that and turned it into a breakout season at the MAC in with 8 touchdowns. So we'll be talking about him a bit later. Right now, though, it's 11:15, and that means it's time for 3 questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for 3 questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, 3 burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
So in their day 3 draft presser, Pete Carroll kind of went on a tangent about a certain defensive back that you guys might have heard of before and talked about if there's a possibility if he could come back. Here's what he had to say.
No, I've talked to Sherman quite a few times here over the offseason, so we have stayed in contact. He's out there. I know he's thinking about it. He's looking for an opportunity, and I saw where he said there's 3 or 4 teams that he's considering or whatever. So we'll see what happens, but he's been a great player, and he's still got some ball left in him, I'm sure. But at this point, we're going to clear through this day, figure out what happens with the rooks coming up, and we'll see where it sits later on.
So what percent chance do you guys give for a reunion actually happening between the Seahawks and Richard Sherman?
I'm going to give it a 30% chance.
30? I was just going to say non-zero.
Oh, really? I was going to give it a 30% chance. Anything is possible. I'm not going to say... It's not going to happen. There's no way it's going to happen. I think that there's always a possibility. If they were able to get Richard Sherman at the right price, I think that it would be something that they would definitely be interested in, to bring in that type of presence, to bring in that type of veteran personality. But in terms of where their mindset is, I don't think that they necessarily want to bring in Richard Sherman, just because I really do believe that they think what they've brought in, the collection of talent at corner, the competition that they've been able to create at the cornerback spot heading into this 2021 season, is extremely positive, and they want to see it play out. And so I think that everybody that they've added to this group is intriguing. They're all hungry. They all need some. They all have something to prove. And I think that's kind of what they want to do. It's at some point you've got to look at certain positions and say, hey, we're not going to spend as much money here. We're going to take a sacrifice here, and we're going to let competition play itself out. We want the cream to rise to the top in this situation. And I think corner is one of those positions heading into training camp.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Pete Carroll himself, I know you just mentioned this, said we're not looking to add there. Meaning specifically, they're not looking to add more veteran talent there. Like, I'm sure they'll bring in some undrafted guys to compete. And I think there might already be a corner listed. Jake's going to be talking about some of those undrafted rookies that have been signed to the team coming up in 4 down territory at 12:15. They specifically said, look, as of right now, we're not looking to add veteran talent, essentially, at corner. The reason that he's keeping the door open, the reason that I have it as a non-zero chance, is the Seahawks always have to look at every single avenue. When you are a team that wins often, and say what you will, like I just did, about the Seahawks' lack of success in the postseason or their stumbles in the postseason, they are one of the winningest regular season teams. And when you do that, you have less options because the league is built for parity. So you got to be creative. You have to look at busts that are now cheap free agents, and you have to look at guys that used to be with you that may now be affordable or not with their old teams. In this case, that's Richard Sherman. He may be more affordable now than he was a couple years ago when San Francisco clearly outbid you for his services.
Right.
I think given Pete Carroll's relationship, it's something you have to consider. I found myself, Jake, though, wondering during his answer whether we would ever see Richard Sherman back here, not necessarily as a player, although that would be interesting to see, but potentially as part of the coaching staff.
Number 2.
I don't know. I was just thinking it. It was just throwing it out there into existence. It wouldn't be this year. I'm just saying.
Yeah, in future years. Okay, yeah. Something to keep an eye on.
Question 2. According to Ian Rappaport, the Seahawks are expected to decline the 5th-year option for running back Rashad Penny. Now, before I ask this question, the jury is still out on Jordan Brooks and LJ Collier. We still need to see more from them.
Keep it fair.
Why have the Seahawks struggled so much drafting in the first round?
This pick will always be one of those picks that go down as one of the worst Seahawks picks. And I don't mean that as Rashad Penny wasn't a good player. It just the pick, the position, the value of that pick at that time never panned out. And then you always have to be reminded of falling behind that came Nick Chubb.
I knew you would say that.
It's going to be synonymous with Rashad Penny. Now, here's one thing that I will say from a positive perspective about Rashad Penny is that they are not going to – why on earth would you commit to a fifth-year option for a running back when you have no idea if he's going to remain healthy? That's been Rashad Penny's problem. He's had flashes of brilliance. He's had flashes of moments where you're like, oh, my gosh. Before he tore his ACL in that Los Angeles Rams game, he was going on a couple-game stretch where you were thinking, man, they finally – got him in a rhythm and in a role that he's going to contribute at a high level with. The one thing that Rashad Penny has to do is prove that he can remain healthy, and the team might bring him back after this following year, but at an easier price point. Why would you commit to a guaranteed salary, basically, you know, over $4 million guaranteed for the next year when you don't even know if he's going to be available? I mean, that's the biggest, you know, part to the equation here. And so I don't necessarily think Rashad Penny's future here in Seattle is over by any stretch of the imagination if he's able to have a successful year here. It's just not worth the $4 million price tag of that first round fifth year option tender. But DJ, yeah, this is always a pick that you know, Seahawks fans are going to have a hard time with.
Jake, totally agree with you. Credit to Danny O'Neill of Danny and Gallant earlier this morning, too, for pointing out that part of the, whether it's the base salary, I think, of that fifth-year option is fully guaranteed for injury, which, as a guy who's never played a full season for you, if you're the Seahawks, you're probably thinking twice about. If there is one thing you can say that might work for them, it's even if Rashad Penny has a breakout season, well, it's his only breakout season, so there is a chance that another team may also not be willing to spend a lot of money, and you can still outbid them for his services and take another shot on him on a second contract. DJ, it's such a great question. I don't know why it hasn't worked out. I think that, you know, I remember I was looking at Tampa Bay's team building. So when they were in the Super Bowl, I forget what it was. Jake and I were having a really interesting conversation about team building. And so I was looking back at the way that Tampa Bay had been able to build. They hadn't been to the playoffs since 2007. When DJ was like four. And so you have a lot of time there to get those early round draft picks. And I think that, you know, not to make it a cop out, but I do think that's part of it. Like, there is a difference between choosing fifth overall or 10th overall and 30th overall. And I think that that is a fact. There's a difference between getting Evan White.
Decision between Rashad Penny and Nick Chubb, and you choose Rashad Penny, that. There's really not, both players are available at that time. That's evaluation. And
I know.
And so you have to wear it. You have to wear it. And unfortunately, I think the biggest problem, if we were talking to Pete Carroll and John Schneider about this, they'd sit there and go, well, has he played a full season yet? It's one of those things where injury sometimes gets in the way of really truly finding out if this guy is a quote-unquote bust. That's why I have a hard time labeling Rashad Penny as a bust, other than just being an overall just not a good pick at that particular slot. But he's not a bust to me because he hasn't been able to fully play due to injury, and that to me is truly unfortunate because we haven't been able to get a full evaluation of him, and that's what Pete and John would say, but sometimes it's bad luck at that position.
All right, gonna hold off on question number three, DJ. I'm gonna go ahead and ask Mike Salk that when he joins us next, because we know how national pundits feel about the Seahawks draft, but how about a local voice? Salk joins us next. Do not go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by JAFCO Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, you are no stranger to bad grades for Seahawks drafts. I'm sure you've seen 1,000,005 national reviews that were like, I don't know what Seattle was doing here. And sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't. But I know not to read too much into it. However, I am noticing a lot of kind of disappointment from kind of national critics about this class. Do you think that's just because it's hard to get an A grade with three guys, or do you think they did miss out on something?
Yeah, I mean, this is like taking the SATs and not filling out your name or not completing half the you know, segment. Like, oh, I did the math. Was I supposed to do the verbal also? Geez, I didn't think about that. I mean, yeah, you can only do so well with three picks. I mean, especially when none of them are in the first round. How good a grade could you possibly get? That's not to say they blew the picks they made, but without that kind of draft capital to get upper echelon kinds of players, I think it's difficult to grade them particularly highly.
Now, Salk, did it surprise you that, one, they stayed with only three picks, that they kept pick 56 and they used it, and that they used it on a receiver?
Definitely surprised they only kept three. It sounds like they tried to trade back, obviously, and just weren't able to do it. So, okay, sort of similar to what happened last year. Maybe that's, you know, telling that 2 years in a row now they've been unable to trade back when they were trying to do so. Receiver, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I like the kid they got. Eskridge seems interesting. I think all the comps that I've seen, read, and talked to people about, kind of a Golden Tate, maybe, kind of player, which kind of leads me back to, all right, well, I wish you just signed Golden Tate. Use this.
No, this guy's more explosive than Golden Tate. This guy's more explosive.
I don't know if I see that. Golden Tate's pretty darn explosive, especially with the ball in his hand, sturdy, physical. All right, maybe this guy's faster at this stage in his career, but I don't know. I see a Golden Tate kind of player, and for me to go the long way around to now come back to that kind of player seems, you know, you could have just kept the guy to begin with or maybe brought him back. Regardless, it's not that I dislike the pick. Like the guy, by all accounts, you know, you need more weaponry. You need more people who can help Russell and fit into this offense and all the different ways they plan to use them and kind of bringing over Shane Waldron's system. So I like what they did. Difficult to say that it's enough.
Speaking of returning veterans, Mike, how many people have asked you whether or not you think Richard Sherman's coming back?
A few. Yeah. Get the whole gang back together. Well, you know, since the whole Russell Wilson thing was just nothing, that's what Pete told us, right, last week. It was all just immediate creation.
We made it all up.
And the Richard,
correct, yes.
Right, and the Richard Sherman situation was obviously just immediate creation. There's no reason, you know, this can't all just come back together and everybody will be happy together. Russell, Richard. I'm sure Russell's totally forgotten about the way Richard completely buried him with that article that he sourced without giving his name. I'm sure all of that is just blown over and there won't be a problem.
Salk, you look at the other surprise of this draft, and that is cornerback Trey Brown. And it's not the fact of his play, it's the fact of his size. That the Seahawks seem to be okay with going after smaller corners now. They were famous for going after bigger, longer corners like Richard Sherman, Brandon Browner, and really kind of revolutionized the position or the outlook of the position over the last 10 seasons. Now they're kind of going backwards on this. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I hope it means that Pete is continuing to evolve, that he's not stuck in his ways. It's one of the things that made the early years of the Pete Carroll era here in Seattle so special, is Pete did his own thing. No, he didn't play cover two, despite having done it with Monty Kiffin for all those years at USC, right? He decided that he wanted to use a different system in the NFL that would fit better. He revolutionized the game, as you said, by going to the bigger, larger corners. I'm hoping it means that he's looking around his division and believes that smaller, speedier, but still with an ability to come up and help and run support is a better fit for where the game is going. And, you know, Cam Chancellor was a fit in his time and place. Maybe you need more of a Jamal Adams type now in this time and place. So I'm hoping that it means Pete just has his adaptive and evolving view of the world, and it's leading us to some changes on the back end.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that really stands out to me, though, Salk, is that cornerback position, sometimes when you get caught up in physical, checking of the box, right? They need to be this arm length, this size, you know, this everything. You lose out on the intangibles, right? I mean, they themselves saw the greatest aspect of that with, at the time, Russell Wilson being undersized, Richard Sherman himself being an outlier at the cornerback spot with his size, you know, kind of in the opposite direction, because they looked at the intangibles of these players, right? And sometimes I think I can't help myself, but maybe over the years they were, you know, trying to check that physical checkbox that they forgot about the intangible part of that position, whereas DJ Reed kind of snapped them back into it. Look at of this spunky guy on out on the edge who is tough, who is physical, who is who's a guy who's going to let you know about it. And maybe they kind of got themselves snapped back into that idea at that cornerback spot of, hey, we need someone who's physical and edgy, because that's honestly, when I watch the film and I get to know Trey Brown a little bit, we're going to have, you know, his defensive coordinator on, Alex Grinch, here at 1 o'clock. I'm curious to know that side of it, because it sounds like he's got that in spades.
Yeah, he's got some of that scrappiness, right? And really, what do I want in a cornerback in a Pete Carroll system? Sure, size is great. What I really want is an ability to just take the darn ball away, have the instincts on
right.
the field to create turnovers, to get the ball back. And we have not seen that. I don't care how tall and long Trey Flowers is. He doesn't go get the ball, right? Find guys that get the ball back for your offense. And if Trey Brown is going to be that guy, I'm wide open to the idea that he can be. So, look, draft grades mean nothing. On the other hand, you start going back over these years and, you know, the first-round picks that the Seahawks have made, they haven't really worked out since the first couple of seasons, right? You decide yesterday or today that they're officially not going to pick up the option on Rashad Penny's deal. Another draft pick where you look at it and go, geez, late first round, there were other options there. There were other things they could have done. I still think Penny could end up being a good player, but it's in all likelihood you're going to get one more year of him here, and then he's going to move on, mostly because of the injury issues. So there's a lot of different reasons. Effetti was just a flat-out bust. Carpenter, they let go elsewhere. But at some point you're looking at this list and saying, gosh, where is the productivity from your first-round picks?
Yeah. All right. A good conversation that Jake and I are actually going to dig back into later, because there is a pretty important question that needs to be answered there. He is Mike Salk, again, brought to you by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer. Thanks, Mike.
See ya.
All right. We know Pete Carroll is an eternal optimist, but he said something about this Seahawks roster over the weekend, and you know what? He just might be right. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
You got three picks, Jake, three guys to choose from, and here's how this is going to work. I'm making the rules. We have to choose one of these guys, one of these three new Seahawks that are going to have the biggest impact in his rookie season. Your choices, you already know, but they're as follows. Wide receiver Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan. He was chosen in the second round, Seahawks' first pick. You also have Trey Brown, your cornerback, out of Oklahoma. And then you have Stone Forsyth out of Florida, your new offensive tackle. So, Jake, I will let you go first because I am a good friend, because I am a lady, and I'm going to let you have your first pick about which new Seahawks draft pick can contribute the most in his rookie year.
I think without question, it's going to be Dwayne Eskridge. I think that what he does out of the gate, Stacy, I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. And one of the things that I love about this pick is that I think that there is a very high floor in terms of what he can contribute at his rookie year. Like when we were talking about DK Metcalf, let's all go back to 2019 when DK Metcalf was selected, and we're all talking about, okay, DK Metcalf, if he truly does have a limited route tree, what does that look like?
Right.
Okay, it's a go, it's a slant, it's a hitch, it's a 10-yard stop route. Maybe you can add a deep cross to that. Well, guess what? He can do that pretty darn well and do it at an extremely high level. Well, with Dwayne Eskridge, what he does at an extremely high level is he's with the ball in his hands in fly sweep, jet sweep situations, in receiver screens, slant routes, skinny posts, beating guys vertical over the top. I think that he brings more to the table than necessarily what DK Metcalf did coming out as a rookie in 2019, meaning he's more versatile than what DK Metcalf was. It's easier to try and find ways to get Dwayne Eskridge the football than it was for DK Metcalf
Eskridge
coming out as a
Metcalf.
Rookie.
Eskridge is better than Metcalf. Got it.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
That's what it said.
What I'm saying is it's easier to find ways to get him the football. Therefore, the floor for him is significantly higher. If he can continue to keep growing his route tree and can continue to grow the trust of the coaching staff, I think that it will allow him to be a very dynamic, third receiver option with DK Metcalf, with Tyler Lockett. And in 2019, DK Metcalf started running more and more and more of the route tree as the season went on, but you didn't see him get a ton of receiver screens. You didn't see him get the fly sweep options at all as a rookie. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that Dwayne Eskridge can really bring to the table, and it's a good match for this offense, Stacey, because all these things are things that the Rams offense, that this Shanahan, you know, style of offense, they like to do, and it's a perfect offensive fit. And that's why I think that this pick can be so productive right away.
You guys can join this conversation, 710-710 Mac and Jack text line. Which Seahawks draft pick will contribute the most in his rookie season? This hour of Jake and Stacey, by the way, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Now, I don't want to just be an echo chamber, but I do agree with you. I think it's going to be Dwayne Eskridge. It's not just because he's the Seahawks' first pick in the draft. And do I think that he can come in and have the rookie season DK Metcalf did? I don't think so, because I think DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are still going to take the lion's share of your targets. They're going to have the lion's share of your work. But do I think that he can come in and be the type of weapon, like we talked about earlier, that a former passing game coordinator from the LA Rams is going to want to see, that he's going to have a great time using? Yeah, I do. I mean, listen to what Pete Carroll said, by the way. This isn't a cut, DJ, don't worry. But Pete Carroll, during the post-draft press conference, this was on day two when he was asked about Eskridge, he said specifically that they're going to be able to do stuff behind the line of scrimmage. So I know that you just talked about those jet sweeps and those screens and those little things that can just kind of widen that field for you. So not just getting a downfield threat, but letting you attack laterally too. Like, you have someone that's faster than most of the defenders on the other team. Now, could there be a little bit of a learning curve? Yes. Not only do you have a guy that is a year removed from his collarbone injury as a corner, that had, you know, relatively, he wasn't putting up like 1,000-plus yard seasons in college. He had relatively limited time. You're also having a first-year offensive coordinator. So in reality, I think you might not see like what Dwayne can be until year two or three, but I think he's got the best shot, Jake, to show us the biggest glimpse of that in year one.
That. Absolutely, but that's also why, you know, the texters here on the text line, Jake, don't say he has a low floor because that means he doesn't have a high ceiling. I get the phrase. That's not what I mean here. He has a tremendously high ceiling, but what I'm saying, his production, I believe, has a very high floor for his rookie year, that meaning that I don't think you're going to see a year where he only has, you know, 10, 15 receptions and 100 yards. I think that his production is going to be very, very strong as a rookie, and it's going to be set in his ability to run with the football, rushing yards, and his ability in the receiving game and as a special teams guy. So I think that the production there is going to be at a very high bar, a high floor, with him maybe even being able to achieve much more than that his rookie year, depending on how dynamic this offense really is under Shane Waldron in year one, as you alluded to, Stacey.
Now, we have some texters, some listeners that are disagreeing. First of all, from the 425, nobody's given the new big man any love. Yeah, what's going on here with Stone Forsyth? What about him potentially competing immediately with Cedric Oboihe at that swing tackle spot? And who knows? I mean,
so a backup?
He can also compete.
So a backup position?
You never know. You never know what's going to happen with anyone. You never know if he can impress people. Someone else, 206. I got Trey Brown being the most productive rookie. I'm going to guess he'll start. Oh, that's Christian.
Ooh, okay.
I mean,
like,
he can.
Now,
most here, open room. Most open room this training camp is cornerback.
It is. Without a doubt, it is the most open room. It is going to be the highest level of competition, and I think that that's exactly what John Schneider and Pete Carroll designed that position to be heading into this year. They've got a good mix of young players. They've got a good mix of guys that have had success but have been very up and down. So I think that what they're going to find is, again, going back to that phrase, the cream is going to rise to the top in this particular battle, and if you let Trey Brown have as much run as you want, and not limit him, I think that he's got a chance as much as anybody to go and earn a spot. And I love the way that he plays physically, the attitude, the mindset that he brings. My only question is that can that physicality be dialed back to a place where it is used in the proper way, mm-hmm. and not a way of look, I don't know how to exactly play the position at a high level, so I'm going to use my hands. That's going to draw flags early on in your career, and I'm going to be interested to see how quickly he can transition from college, which is a little bit more lenient in terms of their willingness to be more physical, to now the NFL game, where it's going to be very easy to draw penalties. So that's going to be the one area that I'm going to be concerned about with Trey Brown. Other than that, he's a playmaker. He finds his way to the ball in the run game and in the passing game. He can get interceptions. He's extremely explosive. So I'm not going to count Trey Brown out at all. And I think that it should be open to competition. Now, just quickly, Stacey, to get to Stone Forsythe. This Seahawks staff believes that Stone Forsythe was one of the biggest steals in the draft. I have a hard time believing that Forsythe has a real opportunity to compete for a starting roster today. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not going to beat out Dwayne Brown at left tackle.
Right.
I'd be curious to see if they let him compete with Brandon Shell at right tackle. But to me, this is a very, very good pick, a developmental pick for the following season. We'll see how quickly Stone Forsythe can get himself into the action. But I think this is a 2022 projection more so than anything else with Stone Forsythe.
You know, I will say my mom, I saw her over the weekend and she was asking about all the new Seahawks draft picks. She was curious to learn all about them. And I told her about Stone Forsythe and told her just how tall and big he was. And we're a family of small people. And she was just in awe. Like, she couldn't believe at all that someone could be that large.
Moves just extremely well. I mean, right? I'm really impressed watching him on film, how you know, nimble he is, how athletic he is for his size. And he just seems to be a guy that really has a good foundation as a pass protector, but as an overall tackle, just needs a little bit work and development. And I think that he could definitely be a good one.
All right. We are taking you around the diamond, by the way, thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners will begin a 3-game series against the Baltimore Orioles tonight at 7:10 p.m. Pregame at 6 on 7:10 ESPN Seattle. The Orioles will start Dean Krimer on the mound, while the Mariners have not determined who their starter will be, as today would have been an outing for Marco Gonzalez, who is on the 10-day IL with a forearm strain. So stay posted for updates on that. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Pete Carroll thinks he has a competitive roster, but is he being overly optimistic? That's next.